All right, we might get started. Thanks for coming. So this session is going to be on implementing a holistic evidence-based approach to psychological injury management. It's going to be presented by Andrew McGarrity. So Andrew currently serves as the manager of the injury management in Fire and Rescue New South Wales. In his time at Fire and Rescue, he has implemented an evidence-based approach to occupational rehabilitation and championed early intervention and systematic early rehabilitation. In 2003, while working for New South Wales Health, he started intervention trials at Concord Hospital regarding psychosocial impacts on injury, which led to a research project that applied early triage and rehabilitation principles. This research was initially undertaken in the Area Health Service and has since been implemented across New South Wales Health with results showing significant cost savings and improved health outcomes. Andrew has taken the learnings from his original New South Wales Health program of work and applied these principles within Fire and Rescue New South Wales to address the specific needs of emergency services workers. Andrew's injury management program has resulted in an improvement in the supports available to firefighters, which has led to a decreased overall cost and significant reduction in premium. So I will now hand over to Andrew and he can take us through the session.
Thank you. Lovely. A couple of very quick things before I get started, because I tend to just talk. First thing is that I do need to leave straight after my session, so if there are any questions, I'll get them at the end of my talk, so I apologise for that. I was just saying I've had a little personal exposure to trauma with my niece being hit by a car, so we're going home to help manage that. She is okay, by the way. Second thing, as I start going through this talk, I will be referring to we quite a lot. And I will preface this in the conversation that we have, that there were three really important partners that we had during this process of, number one, identifying how to best manage our psychological injuries and also how to implement an evidence-based process around that. So at the outset, if I start saying we, PwC were our actuary at the time and they were invaluable, and now, then and ongoing, Employers Mutual is critical in our work. We are genuinely self-insured and we do everything together. So everything that I talk about here in terms of approvals and process, we do as a team. I'm not just saying that because there's some of them here. It's true. The psychological injury cohort within Fire and Rescue is very problematic. They are very, very rarely a simple diagnosis. There's usually multiple diagnosis or secondary diagnosis involved. We are one of the, in the strange situation that we send our people into very, very dangerous situations. We do that every day, and they are expected to go into the burning building and save the person. So it's not a matter of us being able to ameliorate the risk, because the risk is inherent within the role. What we need to do is make sure that we recruit the right people, that we train the right people, and that we support the people throughout the process. As you can see, by 2014, despite putting in a psychosocial triage process in about 2013, psychological claims in terms of percentage were starting to go up. Most importantly, though, in terms of the percentage of payments, they were going up very, very quickly, and the costs were hovering around the $4 million mark. Now, I could go into huge amounts of detail about the work that we then proceeded on with PwC, where we broke down all of our claims, we broke down all of our mechanisms of injury, and we started trying to work out where we needed to focus our resources in terms of psychological injury. So you can see there that work pressure was actually higher than trauma and bullying and harassment. And that would have been easier if we'd actually taken that at face value. But I'll give you some examples of why the actuarial analysis really sent us down the wrong way. We had a firefighter who very rarely came to work. When he was on shift, he tended to either say that he was going to a physiotherapy session for a shoulder injury. He said he needed x-rays or CTs or had to see his doctor. It got to the point where professional standards became involved because of absenteeism. and because of the psychosocial process that we'd put involved, we had him seen by a doctor. That doctor diagnosed him with PTSD. He said it was chronic, it was severe, and it was one of the worst cases of PTSD he'd ever seen. We did check that, and he did. It was PTSD. The reason he wasn't at work was not because he was trying to avoid work. He had PTSD, but he didn't feel the need. He didn't feel comfortable coming forward and telling us about it. So that claim was actually triage's work pressure. He felt under pressure because he was under pressure from our professional standards unit. Where it actually ended up was it was PTSD that we just hadn't picked it up. In terms of bullying and harassment, that was an issue as well, but it was a similar sort of story, but in a slightly different way. We had a gentleman who was having a lot of trouble in his station. He was complaining that he wasn't supported, he put in a few complaints. He then submitted a knee injury, and we triaged that knee injury, and he came up high, and we started talking to him about any supports that we could provide him, any assistance we could provide him, just to help him through his knee injury. At the end of the 45-minute conversation, my return to work advisor said, "Is there anything else I can help you with?" And the guy said, "Yes, my wife's just kicked me out of my house. I need to move out today. I don't know, I have anywhere to live and I can't get my stuff. Can you help me?" That guy wasn't being bullied and harassed. He was in an awful situation at home and didn't know how to deal with it. And he also didn't know who to ask. Luckily for us, by the stage he'd put in the claim, we had some system to pick it up, and we picked it up. And we got his mates to come and help him move. We actually got funding through our relief and welfare fund. We're able to get him some financial guidance and assistance, and also paid for him to get a new house, paid a bond and rent and the like. So when you actually started to drill down, some of these triaging just wasn't right. So if we started trusting the figures, we were trusting someone who looked at the information available at the outset of the claim, triaged it, and then weeks later we found out it was completely wrong. The other thing that we found, that 15% of issues were due to trauma. Now, all of the research that we're getting out of Black Dog, and I recognise I'm about to disagree with one of my other presenters, but I can assure you these are the figures we've been presented, is that emergency services in general have an incidence of about 20% of PTSD. So we know the 15% is wrong. Equally, when we started having a look at our historical cases, and we had Bond University come in and do a fantastic analysis of all of our detached claims, they found that 32% of people had PTSD. But what they found, and it was very, very interesting, was that by the time they actually analysed the claim, they did have PTSD. But when the claim came in, there was no symptoms of PTSD. The way we had managed them and what had happened subsequent had actually caused the PTSD to become about. And there's lots of theories about that. But the general idea from Bond was that quite often people's resilience is decreased because of different psychological issues. So they potentially were being bullied and harassed in the workplace. They put it in. It could have been resolved with some simple mediation. But because we didn't deal with the mediation and we didn't manage that as best we could in the years gone by, that person's resilience decreased and some of the traumatic experiences that they had started to come to the fore and they started to suffer from PTSD. So what we were finding when we started having a look at the actuarial analysis was that psychological injury is very general. There will be a traumatic experience because they're firefighters. All firefighters have seen something traumatic. But how that impacts on them physically, psychologically, is going to be individual. You cannot railroad these people, and you can't say, all right, it's bullying and harassment, I can deal with that over here. You have to take into account that this person may be having some issues at work, but it's probably impacted by their work at home, with their mates, other issues that you are just simply not aware of. The other stat that came up, and I put it up here because it's actually a really critical issue that we get asked about, and that's the age of our firefighters. The ageing workforce is a big issue. And all of the research on PTSD is that while single-incident PTSD does exist, some people just do not deal with that very well, most of the conditions that we see are actually cumulative. So once you have a firefighter with 20 years' experience, they're more likely to start suffering from PTSD. The interesting thing was, that our rate of PTSD went down over the age of 60 when people were actually getting to the age of retirement, which we didn't really know why, so we asked. What we found was while people were having PTSD and were able to have a degree of resilience to cope with that, all of our older firefighters were on a really, really good super scheme, number one, and so were financially quite fine. They didn't have any other stresses in their lives. Number two, while they might have had other family issues, the comradeship that we had developed within fire and rescue at that time, so they all stayed in touch with each other afterwards. So our retirees association, we have surfing clubs up and down the coast where all retired firefighters go and meet each other. They actually had a brilliant social structure. So some of the stresses that some of our younger firefighters were having, our older firefighters weren't. So it's not as simple as just saying, right, there's accumulation here and we need to deal with it. It's not as simple as you've reached a certain age and you're in a greater risk of having PTSD. Again, it came back to the individual. It came back to the assistance and supports that they have in their general psychological well-being. So we came up with an amazing conclusion, which is you actually have to look after the person. You can crunch the figures all you want, but until you've actually got a system in place that actually looks after the person, you're going to fail. So, what we decided to do was an extension of the work that I'd done at Concord Hospital, and I will mention that a bit later on. But what we wanted to put in place was a systematic process where we started off with the injury and we kept involved with them until they got to recovery, and then we moved into injury prevention initiatives to make sure that we gave them all of the care and support that anyone could possibly need. And we didn't simply look at this, and this sort of reflects some of the conversations this morning. The fact that there's the compensable framework there is fantastic. We can pay for a whole bunch of stuff under that. But there's certain things you can't pay for under that. For example, in the case that I just mentioned about moving costs and rental costs. So you need to have another option available to make sure you can support people. You also need to know how you can support them best as well. So our process purely looked at accessing treatment and support. In terms of liability, it is just simply not a concern to me. At the end of the day, one of our firefighters has put up their hand for help and we're going to give it to them. And that is consistent with our goals. We value our firefighters greatly. They do a very, very difficult job. It's very, very hard to find good people who can do the job. The last thing that we want to do is get them injured, and the last thing that we want to do is not manage them so they can come back to work. So we are looking at we're not focused on the diagnosis, but we need to make sure it's right. So our initial triage process is based on the expert guidelines that I'll reference in a second. All of it is early holistic assistance. So just as with PTSD, the benefits of having physical exercise as part of your PTSD treatment is now very well established. But equally with a physical claim, particularly where there's a psychosocial component, exercise is equally important. So we're looking at a holistic intervention process. One of the critical things that is part of our process and I think important in this forum is insurers have a great role to play if they're working with the employer. But if you're an injured firefighter, you don't want to hear from a case manager that you've never heard from. That's not your first port of call. Your first port of call is your mates. Your first port of call is your employer that supports you. So we, as an employer, have to be on that front foot. EML need to support us. EML need to say the same things as us. EML need to make sure that everything happens very, very nice and quickly and easily. But the focus of the support needs to come from the employer. In terms of the example that I provided previously, if someone's not coming to work, there's a chance that there's actually a psychological basis for that. If someone's not being compliant with a plan, there's probably actually a psychological reason for that. So we need to make sure that we're actually taking that into account, that we're talking to the person, that we're trying to establish what the issue is, and in every conversation, supporting them and making sure they're aware of their availability of support and how they can access that. And the other thing for us, and this is a really critical thing for us, emergency services are in the unique situation where we unfortunately have to medically discharge people. there are certain conditions, particularly ones with that can cause acute disorders, for example, diabetes, heart conditions and the like, and people can lose their jobs. You don't think about it until you're in an emergency services situation, but if you think about it, anyone in the room, if you imagine that if unfortunately you have a heart condition and you find out about that this afternoon, quite literally, you will lose your job very, very quickly if you're an emergency services worker. So previously, quite literally, you would have the heart attack, you would be advised, and you would lose your job. So we are trying to manage that far more compassionately through a variety of different ways. I make this a standalone slide. I've already mentioned this. One of the critical parts of this, and this is where EML has been a fantastic partner for us, is they sponsored Sam Harvey and a group of other eminent psychologists and psychiatrists to write the Emergency Services PTSD Guidelines. If you have any interest in PTSD, I recommend you read it. It is so easy to read and it is so easy to follow. And everything that we have done is based on this. It's available on the EML website, as I understand it, and it's fantastic. And honestly, if you read it, you can actually set up a very, very good system for dealing with PTSD and general psychological disorders. So, what did that mean for us? The first thing is that we now need our workforce to be resilient. They will see some bad things. And I say this as someone who only has to read the reports. I read the reports and I get sick to my stomach, let alone having to see it. So we're setting up, there's an online resource called Resilience at Work that's being researched by Sam Harvey at the moment. I understand that's going to be published next year. And that's a completely online system, so it can be used throughout the state. We use that in the preventative space. It's always available. But what we've done in the workers' compensation space is we've also worked with a resilience provider. So if you've had a workers' compensation claim, either for a psychological injury or it's been identified as a psychosocial issue, you still get the Resilience at Work package to try and make sure that you're able to come back to work and that you're more able to deal with the things that you might see with us. The other key thing that I'm going to mention at the top there, I came from health and I had this beautiful, beautiful idea that I was able to cut and paste what I'd learned at health into fire and rescue, which was very, very quickly destroyed as soon as I walked in the door. One of the things that I identified in emergency services is the level of trust between people wearing uniform and people who aren't wearing a uniform. People wearing a uniform want to talk to other people wearing a uniform because no matter how many books I read, no matter how many degrees I get, I will never know the feeling of picking up a dead, burnt baby. I just can't empathise with that. I can't discuss that. Firefighters want to talk to people who actually understand some of the things that they have to see and deal with. So we did do some research. We asked firefighters about when things go wrong, who do you talk to? Who do you want to hear from? Number one was our chaplains. Lindsay Smith is from the Salvation Army, and he is brilliant. He will go anywhere, anytime, to look after our firefighters, and that's who the firefighters want to hear from. He's number one. Second one is our peers network. One of the presenters earlier today mentioned the peers network. So we have now 90 firefighters. They've all been trained by Sam Harvey and get continuous training to help with just general, very, very basic counselling, but they're not really there to treat. They're there to support and direct the person towards the supportive mechanisms available. Third was daylight. Fourth was daylight. Fifth was daylight. Then came EAP. Then came my staff. Then came EML. So I can train my staff all I want, and I have. And we've trained EML staff with everything that we've got. But that's not who the injured worker actually wants to hear from. They want to hear from their peers. So we've also spent, and again, this is where EML's helped out significantly, is training our peers. We have tapped into all of our resources within the chaplaincy. And so when someone gets injured, my staff call them. They have to. It's the legislation. But we don't do it immediately. What we will do is we get in touch with the wellbeing coordinator who coordinates the chaplains and the peers and make sure they're contacted by people who actually they want to hear from. So that piece of research that we did was really important to make sure that we weren't putting a case manager in a situation where quite often if someone's especially coming from a traumatic experience, they can be quite aggressive and rude. There's a lot of reasons for that. So by making sure that the right people are talking to them, we are de-escalating the situation, supporting them, and also protecting our staff as well. The other mental health training, I think someone else mentioned it, was the medical first aid training. It's absolutely fantastic. We've trained most of our most of our managers in it now. All of our staff have been trained in it. It's fantastic training, a very good starting point. We did the initial assessment based on the guidelines, so all of the firefighters with a psychological illness, be it psychosocial or psychological, or get a full psychological assessment. All of the psychologists have been trained in all of our support systems. The idea is to get the diagnosis right, and we generally get that right in most cases now, and make sure they've got facilitated treatment. We also developed our own PTSD book. If anyone's interested, you can email me through the actuaries, and we've got a resource, and that's actually critical. That was based on Rachel Buchbinder's work in the back book. I copied that general idea. And one of the reasons it's really important with people with PTSD is all of the research about PTSD is your amygdala is just firing off like no one's business. So you can talk to someone with acute PTSD and they won't listen to a word that you say, or they won't remember a word that you say. No point telling them about the support networks because they won't hear it. You actually need to give them a written resource that they can take away, and when they're neuropsychologically ready to take in new information, they'll have it there to be able to assist them. So that was a really important part of our process, is making sure there was a very clear, easy-to-read guideline that someone could take home. The last point is, I think, critical for us now and our future. This is now, we're writing up our goals for the next 5 years, and I can see this being important for us. And that's the systematic psychosocial process. So the work that I've done at Concord Hospital was very, very basic. It was looking at whether you could use an Erebro questionnaire, which is just your basic 10-point psychosocial screening questionnaire, to determine if someone's the complexity of someone's injury within 48 hours of injury. And I published that in about 2005, and Professor Michael Nicholas has done that across Department of Health and has got exactly the same result. So what that's actually showing is people who potentially have a psychosocial component to their injury. And that's really where you need to focus. And so that the percentages are very consistent across all of the research that we've done in this in New South Wales. It's about 70% of people are absolutely fine. They don't need your help. They will get better whether you like it or not. 30% will not. And the example that I use, and it's the most extreme example, but I will use it. We had a nurse who was a fantastic registered nurse. Her personnel file after 12 years of service was a couple of pages of leave records, and that was it. She was accused of throwing a bedpan at a patient. There was no witnesses. There was an investigation, but because there was no witnesses, she was let off. 2 weeks later, she was overheard screaming abuse at a patient. She then was referred to the operational nursing manager, and she put in a lower back injury. And that's how she came to me. On the screen tool, she was incredibly high. So I spoke to the nursing unit manager and just asked her if she could hold off on the professional standards investigation for a week while we worked out why. The psychologist that I sent her to was actually ex-military, and he said she had a mindset like an SAS soldier. She was impenetrable. She wouldn't let anyone in till the third session. And that's where she divulged that she was held captive by her ex-partner for 48 hours. She was repeatedly assaulted and had to jump out of a first floor window to escape. And she wasn't dealing with it. So we supported her with that. We actually just left the claim sitting there. Didn't ask for any liability decision. We just gave her psych. We gave her psych for about 6 months while she dealt with that. We then got her back to work. She then had to go and give testimony, so we gave her some more psychological assistance to get over that. And she returned to work. Now, it's an extreme example, but if we didn't give that assistance, she would have gone down an inevitable road of being terminated, and I don't know where her life would be, because I don't know how you deal with that by yourself. Fact was, we actually identified the issue and resolved it. So I actually don't know how much it cost, but it cost a hell of a lot less than recruiting a new really good registered nurse, I can assure you. So what WISE has looked at is, the WISE is Professor Nicholas's study, is looking at that idea of psychologically triaging people, leaving your 70% of people alone, and the 30% putting in place a structured assessment. So you're basically helping people who don't even know they need help yet. So it's not early intervention, it's very early intervention. And that's why we are focusing our efforts here, because it's hard to get firefighters in the treatment door, so we're getting them in even before they know they need it. And what WISE has shown, and the treatment effect is exactly the same as my research in Concord, within 0.4% anyway, is if you give all of that assistance, if you disregard the initial assessment, the initial diagnosis, and just try and work out why this person has put in a claim and what assistance they need, it will cost you more up front, and then that person will recover and go away. So you can see here the high-risk intervention group actually costs less over the longer period. So that idea that you individualise the support through that personal contact will give you longer-term results. So the treatment, it's all holistic. We do not hold off on anything. If someone wants any type of assistance, they get it. The psychological diagnosis is directed by our initial assessment, so we get a lovely report telling us exactly as an employer what to do. We've got also our psychological assessors to give, a dumbed-down report that's perfect for us to distribute to commanders who are fantastic firefighters but ain't psychologists. They want to know, I need to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G to help this person come back to work. So we immediately get a fantastic clinical information, and then we get information that we can then disseminate to the command to make sure we get the person back to work. All of it is systematic. It goes through all of the... Everyone has been trained. All of my staff know what to do. We have trained all of EML know what to do. All of our peers know what to do. The chaplain knows what to do. Everybody knows. All of the support's available for our staff. So it's not a matter of the firefighter now needing to say, listen, I think I need some help with financial management or help with my home situation, marriage counselling or whatever. It gets offered to them. As soon as they put their hand up, it's there. The one other thing that I'll mention in terms of suitable duties, and this is difficult, is everyone's got suitable duties lists and suitable duties ideas. Psychological injury is a bit difficult because what's actually causing the trauma is going to be individual. Some people can't put on a firefighting uniform. Some people can't go to a firefighting station. Some people can't see trucks. Some people just don't want to deal with their platoon or their station. It's really individual. So you need to have multiple areas that they can return to work in. So some of our firefighters for retraining can now work from home and do their online training from home. They can work from any station. We've got the capacity to work from any station. We can get them to change commands if that will make it easier for them. And the other thing that we've done based on the guidelines is we've set up a desensitisation program as well, and we've done that through our education and training program. So where someone mightn't be able to get on the back of a truck and go out to a fire, just in case they need to rescue someone, you can get onto a truck in a completely controlled environment at our education and training facility. So they can do this training in the computer room, they can go out and assist for other firefighters that are learning, or they can participate. So we can graduate the desensitisation of them back to work using that program as well. And also, because they need to be physically fit, we can actually use gym, going to the gym and being physically active as a return to work option as well to get them back into the station and seeing their mates, which is what they want to do. Very quickly. The other thing is, in terms of our command, like I said, your managers are where it's at. They don't want to hear from us. They want to hear from their managers, their supervisors, their mates. So Sam Harvey partners with us and did what's called the Respect Program. It got published last month, I believe. And what that was very simply is we got our managers and supervisors trained how to have that first conversation. So the idea that it's easy to say, are you okay? But when they say no, what do you say next? So we trained them on it. And what we found was that in terms of the intervention group, even after 6 months, their confidence in having that conversation was maintained 6 months later, and our sick leave in those areas actually decreased as well. And in those areas, our workers' compensation costs decreased as well. And it was just because even if they've got they're off for a physical or a psychological reason, their commanders felt empowered and able to make that conversation. In terms of the return to work, I mentioned the suitable duties options. The other thing is we're a signatory on the health benefits of work. I see that as a really, really critical part of our process. I think it's as a benchmark. I think we're the only emergency service at the moment that is a signatory, and it is saying that we see our workplace as an important place to rehabilitate. We are a supportive workplace. We will support our staff as best we can, and the best way of rehabilitating our staff is get them back and speaking to their mates. In terms of medical discharge, we've got specialised transitional counsellors now. We give people RPLs as part of a normal process with EML. And we've also engaged new providers to start looking at a far more individual and goal-based approach to job seeking. So where that's led us, we've received a couple of awards, which is lovely. And really for us, even though we're spending all of that money and all that time, our average cost of psychological claim is well below other emergency services because we're getting them back to work. And we're just really starting to see the start of a really good trend towards people, even if you have PTSD, it's not a death sentence, it's not at the end of your career, it's just something that you need to get over, and what we'll do is we'll support you until you're back and you're better. And in terms of these costs, so you can see we've just actually in 2017 started to see a bit of a dip in costs. In terms of the new claims, it's actually an interesting thing that our psychological claims remain relatively low, about half other emergency services. Part of me think that's actually believe that it might be hidden because it's still there's some of that stigma attached to, oh, I'm a big beefy man and I can't tell anyone that I'm having a problem. What we're starting to see is people put in physical claims because they know they're going to get psychological support. So it's very, very interesting that we're still getting it. So I think that's another way, another area where, from an actuarial perspective, we're going to have to be very, very careful about our results, because at the end of the day, I don't care what they claim for. I just want them to get help. But it's an area that, at the moment, it's trending well, so I'll take it. And this is our, in terms of our deposit premium, which is the most important thing. So going up is good. This is our, what we, in terms of New South Wales, what they look at is your... the total costs of your premium based on your experience, and they compare you to interstate comparators, and that's your funding model. So what that basically shows is the amount of funding we've got. So because we're outperforming our interstate comparators, we've actually got more funding. So that's our total cost. So previously it was costing us money. We actually got $1.5 million back from the government, and we are now fully funded. We're getting a total of about $15 million back in terms of workers' compensation costs. So... which, again, we're the only emergency service in New South Wales that's achieved that, and all of the trends that will continue. So even though it's been a very difficult process and a very time-consuming process, it's well and truly paid for itself, and in terms of our turnover, in terms of medical discharge, we've been able to start arresting that slide so people can stay. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andrew. It was a really good presentation on some insights in how to manage, mental injury claims. So I'll open it to the floor if there are any questions. Use the microphone there or...
Estelle Pearson. In the plenary session this morning... one of the speakers was talking about the fragmented approach by our federated country, and I wondered to what extent in the emergency services area there's a sharing of experience with other states and also with other emergency services.
That's another 45-minute discussion. To summarise, and I'll try not to bias this too much with my own opinion, we actually tried earlier this year. Insurance and Care, who's our new insurer, has set up an emergency services sharing day between Fire and Rescue, New South Wales Police Force and the Ambulance Service. And it was cancelled after three sessions. And interestingly enough, the feedback was that no one was actually getting anything out of it. My personal belief is that everyone's got a different approach. If you look at the New South Wales Police Force, the way that they approach their claims is very different for us. Their peers set up is very different to us. How their claims team is set up is very different to us. And really how they manage their psychological claims and medico-legal claims is very different to us as well. So in terms of really detail... it's been tried and it didn't work. In terms of general thought, we had a discussion the other day. The police have a program called the Recon program, and I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's basically a standalone hub where police can go and get some really good holistic treatment. You know, it's a very well catered for gym, a dietitian, a psychologist and like. So we were asked if we wanted to use it, and we said no. For the basic reason that's assuming the injury is a physical injury. our basis is it's, if it's if you're a low risk, you're going to get better anyway. So that type of gym's not going to make a big difference to your recovery. If you're high risk, and usually with high risk there's some level of distrust of the employer, you're going to go and see your own treating people anyway. So all that you will do by having those sort of hubs is you're basically doing a psychosocial triage. Your low-risk people go there, your high-risk people still go somewhere else, so you've actually not really made a big difference to your outcomes. So that general model I don't agree with, because it's looking at a physical model rather than a biopsychosocial model. But we did learn from that, and our durability program is a physical program. It's actually far more specific towards firefighting, because firefighting is very different from the physical demands of police. We're able to offer that at every single station rather than having hubs that the firefighter has to go to. So it's job specific. It goes for 3 months, and it's actually got a plan at the end of it as an injury prevention tool. So, there's sharing at a general level that we can make. In terms of the specificity, because of the different approaches to claims, it's very different to sort of cut and paste. Does that answer your question? There is AFAC, there's the Australian Fire Authority Council that's on at the moment. I have never seen anything. I've only been fire for 5 years, but we've just been offered assistance to the option to go to Western Australia. Western Australia is about to look at their medical discharge process, and they're helping people go into retirement. My feedback is that the last thing I want to do is retire people. That's sad. Most of the people who are forced into retirement end up quite depressed because they don't want to be retired. So our focus is getting them back to substantive work, be it voluntary or otherwise. So, again, that you get these differences where I wish Western Australia the best of luck, but I'm not interested in retiring highly skilled, highly motivated people. I think they've got a lot to offer the society, and I'd prefer to go that way. So it's an interesting area.
All right. We'll probably run out of time for questions. So if everyone could thank Andrew again for his presentation.